The black helicopter crowd notion. The tyranny is always lurking just around the corner.
It's nursing. They're making crazy, but now they're right.
Black helicopter crowd really is upset.
The people are stupid and they're drunk. There'll be a revolution and they're going to lose. There are too many guns and too many people ready to fight them. I am a man of peace, but we have gangsters running this country. Criminals, gangsters.
We're normal. We see total criminal takeover, the death of freedom.
It is the most corrupt, degenerate criminal government in American history. I'm trying to awaken people, but look at the morons around you. They're zombies.
You're listening to Black Helicopter News on the Armageddon Records Network. And now here's your host.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Robinson. And today we have a very special guest, the host of Shamanic Freedom Radio, Niall Murphy, a.k.a. Opaqueland. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Andrew.
So let's jump right into things. Can you tell us a little about yourself and your podcast for those who don't know?
Yeah, I'm just on one end. I'm kind of like a sort of frivolous person who's just messing around stabbing in the dark, really. I don't have any kind of agenda. I don't come from any fixed ideological position. But on the other hand, I'm kind of influenced by the likes of everyone from Robert Anton Wilson to Neil Kramer in the way that I think about the world, is that I think that anything that's worth philosophizing over is kind of good to be a stuntman, throw yourself in, and if you have to reevaluate stuff, do it later. But I tend to take a kind of overview of the world and things in the world, and often have a quite a satirical and ironic view of the subject. And I can never resist every now and then throwing a little bit of comedy into it. And a lot of the other time, my podcast might be a bit serious, but depending on how I'm feeling, there's a wide variety of different ways that I might behave or present.
Nice. Yeah, I remember you were in the TARDIS.
Oh, yeah.
And then it dropped you off and you did a Romecast.
Yeah, this was actually inspired by listening to the radio, the BBC Radio 4 version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, because I got a lot of self-taught experience with sound engineering, and I thought, well, I might as well try using some of these sound effects, and I thought I could teleport from spaceships or I could use the TARDIS. In fact, I think the joke was that it was one of those, you know, portable toilets, so I called it the TARDIS. And you know, it fit a lot of things. I think in the one comedy sketch where it turned out I was having a nightmare about the earth being flat, so you know, I just woke up and thought, you know, well, thank God I'm awake now, it's only a dream, that the TARDIS is real but the earth is not flat.
So you've been off the radar for a few months. I don't know if you want to get into that, but I remember in the last few episodes you mentioned you might have to lay low, and because basically the massive Orwellian infrastructure that's been growing in the UK and also the US, and I know that they've been cracking down on the alternative media, podcasters like us and others. I just wanted to know, like, a report on how's that going down there.
Well, to be honest, I've come to the conclusion that they can't really enforce anything. I mean, I'm not, you know, an inflammatory person who's sticking the needle in like a lot of other people are. If anything, you know, I might just cover a few subjects. I might be satirical. I might do jokes and stuff like that. I might speak my mind. But I've eventually just come to the conclusion that they can't really. They can only really make an example out of one or two people. And life goes on and people will carry on saying what they want to say. And the fact is that, you know, we've had mainstream radio presenters come out criticising this. And even half the mainstream media itself are criticising the government wanting to tackle what we can and can't say. And I think one thing for sure is that Britain is very much a country of free speech. It is a country where our rights are divine rights granted to us by God, and the only thing that politicians can do is name what they are going to take away from us. This is not a Napoleonic regime, no matter how much they try to make it out to be. And I just think that people like David Cameron are just a bunch of privately educated, spineless idiots who are just trying to sound like they're being John Wayne with all that power that they have. But even them themselves, they're not anywhere near the centre of the spider's web. So I just think that whatever I talk about, whatever I don't talk about, it might be closing in on us with the more authoritarian regimes coming in, like around the world. But they cannot really take away our freedom to speak, no matter how much they try. They can't take away our freedom to criticise, and it would be unenforceable, because by the time we get to the point where no one can say or do anything, the regime that we have will have a finite life, because everyone will be aware of how oppressive it is, and all throughout history, that has been the case.
I think that the mainstream media is decaying, crumbling, it's falling down. New York Times said themselves they're no longer relevant. So, and also thousands upon thousands of newspapers and news outlets, and all owned by like the same six corporations anyway. So,
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you've seen these videos going around of all these different American news channels which keep on repeating the same script and having hundreds of newsreaders repeating the same stuff. And, you know, you wouldn't get that so much here in Britain because it's on such a smaller scale. We're in a one time zone, you know, we're kind of like the size of two of your states, pretty much. So you wouldn't really get that. But yeah, I mean, it has become really transparent in that sort of way. But I think what they are trying to do with the alternative media is that they're just basically trying to imitate it. They're trying to get into it and become it and control it. And so I'm kind of a bit skeptical about where InfoWars fits into all of this, you know, myself, because Alex Jones seems to have a lot of money. He seems to, you know, that whole network that he has seems to be very big indeed. And I just find it really difficult that anything grassroots can actually come up. So I'm not 100% sure, you know, that Alex Jones is 100% kosher. There also seems to be a lot of very, you know, what I say, right-wing undertones to what he's talking about. You know, from a British perspective, some of the British guests that he's had on, they're not very popular in the alternative media over here. Like, he seems to be interviewing a lot of people from UKIP, which is the UK Independence Party, and they're kind of seen as a kind of xenophobic, isolationist, Europhobic joke over here. And also, a lot of the press reports that he seems to be getting tend to be coming from British papers like the Daily Mail. And, you know, they have a reputation over here for being, let's say, knee-jerk, reactive Puritans who don't do any critical thinking of their own. And then, of course, he had Donald Trump on his program. Yeah, so it just makes me wonder, are they set up to sequester, you know, and to co-opt the alternative media, and then to just slowly, insidiously insinuate certain mainstream agendas? And one of my present working theories that I have at the moment is that in a society like the one that we've had at least, you know, since the 80s, which has been based on individualism, they say it's been based on free market capitalism, but it's really based on corporate gangster capitalism. But it's been based a lot on the individual. And then I think this has been set up specifically so that when a counterculture to that comes along, it can then take on a form of socialism, collectivism, communism, Marxism, and if we're really unlucky, Stalinism. And I kind of feel that, like, certain things that are happening in colleges and universities with safe spaces, with political correct speak, with so-called ethnic diversity and all of that, is to make everyone the same, to make half of everything that you can think of saying offensive to certain people so that your words can be censored, so freedom of speech can be curtailed. And it stinks of the old pre-Cold War, you know, or Cold War era oppression of what you can and can't say and what you can and can't think. And in the 1980s, when capitalism was in the West and communism was in the East, there were certain things that we held sacred, like freedom of speech, you know, was absolutely sacrosanct. No one was going to take this away from us. Then, of course, when capitalism became the world, or I don't know what you call it, that combination of dubiously named so-called capitalism, democracy, free market, Western materialist stuff that became the uni power in the world, all the freedom started to slowly disappear from it because we weren't juxtaposed against a politically opposed enemy anymore.
Studio album Philosopher's Stone, including the smash single New World Order. President Zen 1, Philosopher's Stone, the digital album, available on iTunes, Amazon Music, Google Play, and CDBaby.com. Get your copy today.
Pump up the volume and let the music play. President Zen 1, new CD, Rorschach Test. Featuring the smash single, Project Bluebeam. Rorschach Test, available on iTunes, CD Baby, Reverb Nation, and other fine music stores. You can buy my new CD, Rorschach Test and Philosopher's Stone, both for only $9.99. Check us out on Armageddon Records Shop or on eBay. I've got digital download cards of both EPs for sale, or just inbox us at zen1music@gmail.com. What are you waiting for?
Andrew Robinson here. At Armageddon Record Shop, we've partnered with eBay to expand our operation. My goal is to find the best deals on the highest quality products and give them to you at the lowest prices possible. The New World Order wants us dependent. We need to be self-sufficient. Visit us at ebay.com/USR/Armageddon Record Shop. Books, video games, clothing, and much more. New items every month. Armageddon Record Shop on eBay.
You're listening to Black Helicopter News, your trusted news source in the alternative media.
David Icke, I heard your interview with him in 2009. It's a great interview. I posted it on the Facebook page for the podcast, and I tweeted it the other day. Yeah. You guys talked about some deep stuff. How did that interview happen, and what was it like meeting him?
Well, I say, with David Icke, I mean, you know, I've always had a bit of a soft spot for him. I mean, I'm not 100% sure what he's about these days, but you know, he did kind of, whether you'd like him or not, whether you agree with him or not, he did actually create the first clearing into a lot of this thought and this world that we've gone into now, and he was one of the first people to come out and be publicly ridiculed. So, you know, I think fair play to him for that. But yeah, I was in Avebury Stone Circle in Wiltshire in England. You know, Avebury, which is near Stonehenge, another ancient site. And I just happened to bump into him, and I had my microphone with me, so I just grabbed him for a few minutes. And yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool to meet him. I think since then, though, I have become a lot more sceptical about certain aspects of what he's saying. I think he means well, and I don't think of him the same way as I think of Alex Jones. I think, you know, he seems like a more benevolent, nicer man than that. But at the same time, I think in his early days he was a little bit naive. I think, I mean, this is only my opinion, you know, and I'm sure he himself would think I'm entitled to this. But I think he spoiled it when he started talking about shape-shifting reptiles. I think there was an element of allegorical truth in that, in the sense that psychopaths, pretty much, who run our world, have brains which are very much more like reptile brains. They lack humanity. They lack even the sort of mammalian side. They're purely survivalist brains, which are suited to reptiles in nature. That kind of works. But I think when he was actually talking about the shape-shifting reptiles, I think he actually put it into consensus reality as the literal meaning, when really he meant it allegorically. And had he have said psychopaths around the world, not reptiles, had he have said people with brains who operate in the same way that reptile brains do operate the world, it would have been more plausible, and it would have been easier to wake up a lot of mainstream people who actually were completely alienated and turned off by the fact that he went so far out there. But then at the same time, he's also said a lot of things, you know, years in advance, especially about the royal family, about Jimmy Savile, and about a lot of these, you know, the Pope and all that, which did turn out to be true and ended up becoming a matter of public record. So he's a double-edged sword, David Icke. But yeah, I mean, I say, you know, fair play to him for being brave enough to, you know, open himself up to the public ridicule that he did do, you know, and almost trash his career and end his career on the BBC, pretty much, which is what he did, to, you know, to take on this new life. I mean, to be honest, I am sceptical about the idea of aliens or UFOs being here, but I do toy with the idea that even though I'm sceptical about it, I also think that if an alien civilization who were very technologically advanced and had, say, even, you know, the means of being able to create Avatar-style genetic human bodies to go into so that they could land on Earth, and given a couple of hundred years to blackmail world leaders and to technologically upgrade the Earth with our resources without us knowing, because they were using detector shields or hiding behind the moon, I don't rule out that that is actually a possibility. I'm not sure whether it's a probability or not. I'm not even sure that's actually happened, but I am open to the idea that that could be done, and it could be pyramidically structured. But I'm still, you know, I'm not convinced that it's not actually secret military technology. You know, I mean, I am, what you call it, not rigidly sceptical, but I am kind of healthily sceptical about stuff like that. I don't believe things very easily, if you know what I mean.
Okay. When you mentioned Flat Earth earlier.
Yeah.
So on the other side of that, or another part of that debate, have you ever heard of Hollow Earth theory?
Yeah, I mean, I have heard of it. It seems to me very much like it's taken from Jules Verne novels, though, to be honest. The only thing is, though, that I've come to the conclusion that I don't think that scientists and geologists necessarily are part of some secret cabal of people who are lying to us about our world. I don't think that those people are the type of people, I don't think they have the right psychological profile, because I think that by their very nature, academics who are into a study of the Earth are not naturally power crazy or psychopathic in the same way that politicians or heads of corporations are. So that's the reason why I'm, you know, not convinced that the Earth is hollow and that it really does have a crust and a mantle and a core. But even then, we don't know for certain that it does have a crust and a mantle and a core. This is, again, a theory, because we've not actually gone down there and seen it. We've not got past the Earth's crust, and our measuring instruments to work this stuff out would be incredibly rudimentary. If you were to try to X-ray the Earth to be able to see all its different levels, you risk killing everyone with radiation sickness to be able to penetrate that deep into the Earth anyway. So, or maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't know. I don't think I am somehow. But it makes, I mean, there could be a hollow Earth. I haven't ruled it out completely. There could be an under the crust sea. I haven't ruled that out. But I am more open to that idea than I am to the Earth being flat. I'm convinced that these people are not using their eyes. You see, my concern at the moment is that we are being bombarded by an overabundance of information at the moment. And in my own personal reality model, information is not necessarily knowledge. Knowledge is not necessarily wisdom. We have to be very careful. We have to be very discerning. If we have an open mind, we have to have a discerning mind as well as having an open mind. There's a lot of stuff that we can't actually prove. And we might be open to the idea that certain things are the way they are. But we cannot, you know, really be 100% sure. And with a lot of information there is at the moment, it's very easy for suggestible people to be led by the nose. And this is the thing that we have to be careful of. I think from where I see it, in the time of, say, you know, the Dark Ages, when the Christian crusaders in the early days were going around Europe and basically saying, you must believe in our God or we'll kill you, you must convert to Christianity or you'll be burnt or drowned or whatever, they had total, you know, monopolistic control over information. So outside their world, everyone, the peasants, if you like, lived in a world of no information, with, you know, the Library of Nicaea being burnt down and all of the sort of the old knowledge being taken away from the people, and Christianity being, you know, the iron fist of Christianity being shoved down everyone's throat. And then when we got to the era of the Enlightenment, what happened was that because there was a lot of new ideas, there was early science, I think before it had become the conjectural theorized scientism that we have these days, there was a lot of Baconian science, trying, testing, repeating. There was a lot of new inventions. There was the Industrial Revolution. And the church had to take a back seat. So this, I think, created what I would call the time of medium optimum information. We weren't in a time of overabundance of information like we are now in the late 20th, early 21st century, where the internet has come along. And I've come to the conclusion, as a result of that, that we risk going into an inverted dark age based on a scarcity of overabundance rather than a scarcity of nothing, because the amount of information there is out there at the moment, and from a lack of discernment and a lack of wisdom, is quite brain frying to a lot of people. And a lot of people do seem to be going mad as a result of, you know, taking fixed ideological positions and becoming very collectivist, often in a really fundamentalist sort of way. And I think the flat earthers are a good example of that, because in my experience, a lot of them have been very aggressive, violent attack dogs. And rather than get into a debate about whether the earth is flat or whether it's a sphere, they're straight out there to actually call you insulting names because you don't think like they think. And I don't think that's really a way to go. I think that we're all sovereign, we're all individual, we're all seeing the world subjectively from where we see it. If we think like Sherlock Holmes rather than like Alex Jones about this, and we're very careful to discern everything as best we can and put a lot of effort into really thinking about, is it plausible, is it not, when we approach anything, never sticking to one fixed ideological position, never really going with the crowd, and being truly authentic to who we are as individuals ourselves, then we might stand a chance.
should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Members have been murdered, Chief Inspector.
We're interrupting your regularly scheduled program to bring you this terrifying report.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
Jane, what more can you tell us about the Salomon Brothers building and its collapse?
New York, very much a city still in chaos. The phones are not working properly. The subway lines are not working properly.
The sky now black with smoke in front of us. Just across the Tigris River here. This is shock and awe, Tom, to the population of Baghdad. Shock and awe, indeed.
The people you liberate will witness the honorable and decent spirit of the American military.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists.
Come on.
It is a big idea, a new world order.
I love my dad. I'd kill for him. I'd go to prison for him because I love him so much.
I love Bill Clinton.
What does that make Hillary Clinton to the Bush family?
My sister-in-law.
When you are subverting the power of government, that's a fundamentally dangerous thing to democracy.
What do you think of Edward Snowden?
I think he's a traitor.
Obama is the one that kills the U.S. troops if the Russians bomb any of them. Obama is the one that put them in harm's way. Obama is the one using them as human shields.
It is the most corrupt, degenerate, criminal government in American history.
I'm here to warn people. You keep telling me to shut up. This isn't a game.
Welcome to America, ISIS. This is what we do. Woo!
We got people that have taken your asses out in this building right now. We're armed to the teeth, and we're not scared. You got that, you sons of bitches?
In 2012, your agency was saying, quote, the Salafists, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda in Iraq are the major forces driving the insurgents in Syria. Mm-hmm. In 2012, the U.S. was helping coordinate arms transfers to those same groups. Why did you not stop that?
Why didn't you come forward before? What were you waiting for?
Well, for you, Inspector. I needed you.
I suddenly had this feeling that everything was connected. We're all part of it. Are we ready for it?
You're listening to Black Helicopter News.
So I wanted to ask you about the importance of shamanism and or psychedelics. And is it an important component to achieve conscious evolution? I know you've spoken about that a lot.
Well, I think personally that they can be used as initiatory tools and have been throughout tribal societies, use them as initiatory tools. I mean, it can be good and it can be bad. That's the trouble. It's like, you know, you can get into a car. If you can't drive it, you can cause a pile-up on the freeway. It's not going to, you know, do anyone any good. And I think the trouble that we have at the moment is because we've been living in a prohibitionist culture, and because psychedelic use has kind of come from a youth cultural thing from the 1960s onwards, people have mostly misused them. I think in the time right away from the psychedelic era, from Haight-Ashbury right up to the psytrance parties that you will have now, you will see a lot of people who all they really want to do is get out of their heads. And you will only find a few people here and there that are using these tools wisely. Again, you do find a lot of these kind of, what do you call it, white, wishy-washy middle-class liberals who are jumping on, ayahuasca. And it's become a kind of middle-class pastime for a lot of the, what we'd call Hampstead hippies over here. I don't know what your name from over there, but they're sort of like middle-class bohemians. And it does seem to be about plagiarising cultures, you know, in a really patronising sort of way. And a lot of these people have sort of hubris. They're trying to come across like they're experts when they're not actually. And I think that shamanism itself as a concept is not triggered by psychedelics. I think that it is triggered by some experience that might take you outside consensus reality. It could be a childhood fear. It could be a mega epiphany of sorts. It could be, you know, a certain realization that you are not as conditioned as other people, that you are more different even from those who say they are different. But the tools themselves can, if used right, if used wisely, can bring closure to a lot of mysteries. But I think that we are living in a culture where, one of my best ways of describing it is, that we have certain elements of cultural furniture missing from our living space. So as a result, there's not really anything to go on. And we are just still at this point cutting through, making the first clearings. Whether or not we can get a culture of shamanism in the future depends on, you know, a lot of factors. If we could get over prohibition, if the war on drugs could stop, if you know, the kind of perceptions that people have, that kind of just say no to drugs mentality could go away while people turn a blind eye to people dying from alcohol poisoning and from pharmaceuticals, then maybe we would be able to make a start. I think some of the like academic conferences like Breaking Convention have a lot of, you know, the cream of psychedelic academia who are studying it in a scientific way, who are studying it in an anthropological way, who are really trying to really do the research that had never been able to be done since it was made illegal in the 60s. I think that's beginning now. But I think that we, while we have this kind of prohibitionist, reckless, you know, drug user approach to these substances, we have a lot of obstacles to go through, and a lot of people will use them in the wrong way. And maybe some people use them in the right way, but will go through a stage of using them in the wrong way before they actually do use them the right way.
Switching gears,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you about your music.
Well, so, I mean, I have a recording studio. I've got a few analog synthesizers from the 1980s I'm really happy about. And, well, I mean, I've kind of got more into, I'm more into recording other people, really, than I am into making music myself. I mean, I do sing as well, this is another thing. But I haven't really been very musically productive. I've got a couple of instrumental doodles that I've done recently. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of my influences, I suppose, come from the likes of, I mean, my favourite band, the Osric Tentacles. I don't know if you heard much of them.
No, but now I'm going to check into them after the episode.
Yeah, definitely. I also like a kind of a lot of the space rocky music you get from the 1970s, from like Gong, Steve Hillage and stuff like that. I also like, going through a bit of a Thin Lizzy phase at the moment, you know, too. I like a lot of the old classic rock from the 70s, like Queen and... like that probably upset a few people. How can you like them? But that's I just love the kind of, you know, the commitment, the charisma, the talent, the creativity, the originality, you know, that came from bands like that. And sometimes, if I was to go to my more extreme end, I also like everything from Beethoven to John Coltrane. But, you know, whatever I listen to musically now, I like the stuff of fine taste, really. I'm a bit of a high-cultured snob, even though I also like punk as well, you know, like bands like the Sex Pistols and the Damned. I like stuff that, you know, whatever style of music it is, if it's done with integrity and it's not done to be cheesy or just to make money or just to copy what other people are doing, I like music that sounds like whoever put it together was trying to be original with it. And we've kind of lost that in the mainstream now. You know, that's well gone. I mean, I look at the sort of legacy that, especially with Britain, I mean, you know, like this musical centre of the universe at one point, you know. We got all these American ideas that came from jazz, bebop and rock and roll and completely superseded America and became the centre of the universe from the 60s to the early 90s. And now I look at it, it's absolutely abysmal these days, the music that comes out of these two countries. How the hell? We've passed our Renaissance era now, it seems. When I look at what's actually happening in the world of music and the media and everything like that now, I think the aggressive marketing of corporate consumerism and the long-term thinking of think tanks to socially engineer us into the era that we're in at the moment has created this more than anything else, and that things like fluoride and other things like that are just merely the icing on the cake. I think that these cultural changes have been planned well in advance because they didn't like what happened in the 60s and the 70s. They thought, oh, the music industry is letting anyone make any kind of original music. We've only got to get in there and own it and regulate it and censor it. So this kind of Simon Cowell, judge panel, X Factor approach means that we have to have state-sponsored, accredited music by music moguls. And that wasn't how it was before. And then a cultural normalisation of that. And then 15, 20 years down the line, we have a bunch of young people who think it's always been like that.
So we talked about a lot. Anything else before we go?
What I would suggest to you listeners and anyone who's coming along, especially to people who are at the entry level, who are going through the early stages of awakening, I would just say to just be really careful, you know, be really careful what you believe. Just information is just merely that, it's information. Just because you've read something doesn't mean that it's true. It's not knowledge. Knowledge is the experience of knowing something. It's not that reading it secondhand and actually you don't know something because you've read it. You've just read something. Knowledge itself, again, I would say, is not enough. The knowings that we develop over time have to be practically applied. They have to be, as we get older, repeated in order for us to accumulate wisdom. And the ultimate goal is wisdom and gnosis, not information and just mere knowledge. We have to, how we are, how we be as people as well is really important, you know. And so we have to be really careful. There are a lot of people with the wrong agendas out there. There are a lot of people who want to overlay their narratives over the top of yours and take a lot of the bad habits off the mainstream with them over into the alternative. And it's a tough ride. So I would say when it comes to the entry level of awakening, just to be really, really careful. If, say, for instance, if you're looking at conspiracy theories, divide them into three. The plausible, the mysterious, and the preposterous, right? Say, for instance, JFK being shot. You can see the direction that his head goes and the direction that Jackie Onassis goes. The bullet comes from the wrong place, and Jackie Onassis is running away towards Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, that's obviously plausible. In the case of Building 7 falling down in 9/11, that's a serious anomaly and an inconsistency that's on film. And that's about as close as we could get to a plausible conspiracy theory. But when it becomes more ridiculous is when you get to the no planes CGI 9/11 stuff, or when you get to the flat earth. There's a lot of really, you know, what I call it, really woo stuff that's out there. And I just say that when anyone goes into the direction of woo, initially take it with a pinch of salt. Don't just believe it. It has to be, you know, studied intensively. It has to be understood properly. And we have to have some sort of compass in our minds to bring us on track when we're going through this mysterious, bewildering, you know, massive torrent of overabundance of information. We have to, whatever it takes, stay sane with it all. And it's a very difficult thing to do. This is an adolescent period that we are in, you know, when it comes to this stuff. Maybe one day it will reach something that resembles adulthood. But that's what I would say. Be careful if you're in the entry level of the awakening, because it's not as easy as it seems. And another thing I would say, never look outside of yourself for salvation. You know, there is no Russell Brand that's going to come and put everything right. All right, thanks. Cheers. And yeah, I would say go to shamanicfreedomradio.podomatic.com. There's an archive of stuff going back.
This has been a worldwide broadcast. End of transmission.